Good afternoon, Eastern Washington and fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from deep inside the heart of future Liberty State, which is getting closer and closer every day that Governor Inslee remains in office. And once again, we are broadcasting, and it's brought to you by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story in the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. Let's take a moment, as we always do, start the show, and let's pray together. And if you're driving, if you have a chance to pull over, do so. Father, we just thank you for America. We thank you for the prosperity that you've poured out on us. And right now, we just pray for discernment. Turn the hearts of our leaders. Give them backbone and courage where they may not have any right now. Lord, we ask that you would open their minds and their hearts to what your leading is and to the truth of this entire situation. And Lord, we ask right now that you would continue, and we thank you for continuing to protect all of your people here in Washington State and beyond. And Lord, we ask also a special blessing on everybody that is listening right now. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, as I always say, our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ, and we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And there's a difference between the gospel of salvation and the gospel of the kingdom. Jeremiah 17, 7 through 8, blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose trust is the Lord. For he will be like a tree planted by the water that extends its roots by a stream and will not fear when the heat comes, but its leaves will be green, and it will not be anxious in a year of drought nor cease to yield fruit. So even in this time, as hard as it is, we have to yield fruit. But also, there's another part about that. A tree that has deep roots doesn't move. So it can't be pushed to one side or the other. And this is also a time where we're supposed to be rooted in the truth and not in hysteria, not in the uneducated, bloated, bloviating bullies that are out there. We are rooted in the truth. Because right now, there are a lot of people acting solely on emotion. And the reason I know that is because all I have to do is say, here's the primary source documents, read it. And if you have a rebuttal primary source document, please produce it. And almost never is that the case, that they produce anything. It's just they know better. They're in charge. They're the elite. They're the black-robed philosopher kings that Plato talked about. No, they're not. And so I want to bring a word back into the English language. Publicly, throughout all of the United States, I hope. And that is the word asinine. Now, it's not a swear word. It is a word to describe behavior that is so outrageously ridiculous and so not grounded in reason that it has a special word associated with it, asinine. So, for example, the wind could be blowing on a street during a protest, and a reporter could ask you, is this protest irresponsible? And the protest is to open businesses so people aren't continuing to be hurt. And I'll get into the facts here in a second. And I could say that reporter is asinine. He is acting in a way that just doesn't make any sense at all. And interestingly enough, you could have somebody who attempts to ban people that they don't like from meetings and then try to blame them for not attending. And then try to make that some source of, I don't know, public ridicule. That is asinine. Okay. And we're going to get into some more asinine things here from our governor, which is fairly easy to do, actually, these days. We're going to get into that here in a second. And I want to talk about something that a lot of people are reticent to acknowledge. And that is that America is strongest when we are working and we are unified. Our enemies around the world are seeing this situation as a point of American weakness, and some of them are trying to exploit it. Now, if you have no idea about warfare or doctrine, okay, there are a couple things that you can go read about. The first is fourth generation warfare. There's several great essays out there on it, and you can read what fourth generation warfare is. And it's not just warfare through a military, it's economic warfare and political warfare and psychological warfare and information warfare and cyber warfare and all these other attempts to attack a country that really aren't maybe talked about in the mainstream media a lot. And speaking of that, I would say right now, the mainstream media is parroting a Chinese Communist Party narrative in regards to a lot of this situation here and is spreading hate and fear. And I'll get into some specifics here in a second. In such a way that people now don't know what to do. And we're going to clear up the law and we're going to clear up what has already happened so that folks know what to do, that we are truly sons of Issachar, we recognize the signs of the times, and we know what to do about it. I want to talk about the second part of this. If you are playing into the Chinese Communist Party narrative that is attempting to weaken America, okay, you are aiding and abetting them. And this is really, really important to understand. Now, there are some folks out there that are just trying to find the truth. That's awesome. Find the truth. Ask questions. Great. But if you knowingly ignore the truth in the primary source documents and you are buying into that narrative, you are actually becoming more dangerous than the virus in America. If you're the one that is spreading the fear and the hate, you are becoming more dangerous than the virus in America. And the numbers bear this out. By the way, suicides, just check that number out compared to how many have died from COVID. Don't be that person. Do the research, find the truth, watch the documentary from Epoch Times, fantastic documentary, with primary sources in there and expert witnesses. And also, I'm going to give you some things, so you might want to get something to write on. I'm going to give you some places you can go look as well to see some outlines of the facts of these things. Now, also, don't listen to the people who are saying that all we need is more government to get out of this. We need a task force, or we need a plan with a study group. And, we need more time. Don't listen to that garbage. The main solution here that's super simple, just get out of the way of the American people government. And particularly some of these folks, these self-proclaimed leaders that are really continuing to hurt people all over society through their bureaucracy. Just get out of the way. The American people, all of us, know what we need to do. Just get out of the way. All right, so let's get into what's been going on here. Because right now, and this is, again, critical, we are no longer talking about the survival of individuals. We're talking about the survival of our country. Mitch McConnell said publicly, and it was on Drudge Report, that states may need to declare bankruptcy, okay? There are, I don't think people understand that if you have a country that begins to not pay debts to another country, that kind of leads to wars, okay? That's a big deal. So for Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Senate, to say something like that, this is a big deal. We're now no longer talking about individuals and this silly, pedantic garbage that I see going on the internet from very uneducated, emotionally charged folks that just say they know better. Well, you don't. And now we're not talking about the survival of individuals. We're talking about the survival of this country. So that's the first thing to frame this. All right, number two, RCW 4326220, 4326220, subparagraph four. This is where legislative leaders, if the legislature is not in session, must grant authority for certain restrictions and waivers to be continued in a state of emergency. It also lays out the governor's emergency powers. Okay. By the way, there is no house arrest power in there. Okay. Quarantines are for putting an individual who is sick into isolation. But it is not, and there is no authority for a quarantine for quarantining healthy people, or what is known in the law as house arrest, okay? And that's not just me saying this. There's people out there that keep, AG Barr actually made a quip about that, all right? So for a week, we asked the question, because April 10th, it looked like all of these waivers restrictions were going to be expired because the legislative leaders had not sent a letter to the governor. And there was no public mention of this letter. There was no public mention of anything. Then when Franklin County in Washington State decided to open its economy because there was no letter, nobody was showing them proof of the letter, suddenly the letter comes out. And the letter is dated April 15th, okay? And it says that they want to allow the governor to extend these waivers and suspensions. These are statutory waivers and suspensions. And some people are trying to minimize these. A lot of these are a big deal, okay? Because they affect somebody. So the attempt of people to minimize this, like it's not that big a deal, it is a big deal to somebody. So let's stop that garbage too. Okay, they signed this letter, all four corners. So Andy Billig, who's from Spokane, leader of the Senate, Mark Schessler, who is from Eastern Washington, the Senate minority leader, Lori Jenkins, who's the Speaker of the House, and J.T. Wilcox, the House minority leader, they all signed this letter. And they said, yes, Governor, you can extend till May 4th. Okay. So that answers that one question that had been out there for a lot of people. All right. Now, I'm going to take a step back right now, and we're going to take a look at what's going on nationally and some facts that are out there nationally so that everybody can be on the same page. Because right now, there are a lot of, I don't know what I'd call them, misinformation sites out there, misinformation from the mainstream media, so much they're putting out that's inaccurate. So let's talk about UTT. That's Understanding the Threats, one of the premier primary source document sites on Islamism in America, but also on Marxism as well in some respects. Okay, so here's what we know of as of today. And this is up on the UTT website. You can go check it out on their blog. All right. This is from them, that the coronavirus now has been admitted to have come from one of two Chinese bioweapon labs in Wuhan, China. So this is a Chinese Communist Party virus, okay? China lied about the details from the outbreak at the beginning, and China took actions which lead some to assess that this may have been intentional. One of the leading entities creating virus models, COVID Act Now, was created by Marxist Democrat activists, former Democrat Congressman Jonathan Christ Tompkins and Democrat fundraisers. And these are the virus models that have been radically inaccurate. Okay? So you have a Marxist tie-in now. And again, this is fact. Nobody's arguing this, or at least nobody reasonable and educated is arguing this. Traditional U.S. media and Democrat leaders have defended China. We've seen that quite a bit. Democrat leaders are openly saying that they're using this situation to advance their progressive agenda. So not only are the Chinese taking advantage of a crisis, but the Democrats taking advantage of a crisis as well. The solution that has been proposed by both Republican and Democrat leaders is more socialism, more takeover of the economy, more bailouts, all kinds of stuff. Now, this is an interesting statistic. The United States has spent more in the last few weeks than it did during World War II. I want you to fathom that for a second, how much money that is, okay? Saudi Arabia is working to destroy U.S. oil production and capability vis-a-vis Texas. And we're seeing oil prices collapse. One of the key points of communist tactic, as I've studied this over the years, was they wanted to try to manipulate U.S. oil prices because they felt that that was a weakness of the United States, was its energy sector and its dependence on foreign oil. Now, the United States has been manufacturing a lot of its oil, and that's why the collapse of these prices has hit the U.S. so hard, because manufacturers can't compete. They can't stay open. Your current U.S. debt is over $26 trillion. That's an unfathomable number. And the economists at the Federal Reserve of St. Louis are saying that unemployment rates in the next quarter will be over 47 million American workers. 47 million. Think about this for a second. 4 million were just added, and we're now officially over 27 million. But we're going to be, they're projecting, at 47 million people unemployed. Now, as I have been overseas, one of the things that you look at as an indicator of unrest and crime is how many males between the ages of 19 and 54 are unemployed. And the number is going to skyrocket. And local law enforcement around the country are concerned that there might be a crime wave in the offing. Now, I find this fascinating, okay? We're not really arresting the property crime perpetrators right now and investigating it, but the governor's letting out criminals, and they're wanting to fine and, you know, churchgoers and maybe arrest some folks. We're seeing that. We saw that in Idaho. Really? So letting out hardened criminals, not prosecuting property crimes and investigating those to the fullest extent that they should be, and arresting law-abiding citizens who are just trying to exercise constitutionally protected rights. This is a gigantic problem, and there is no answer to what the excuses are for this. There is no excuse for it. All right, so let's get some other things here on the table, because you got to bring a lot of understanding of the law and what the Constitution actually means. Now, there are some people out there trying to be pseudo lawyers who have absolutely no idea what they're talking about. And what I'm about to go down, literally dozens and dozens of Supreme Court cases have reaffirmed these principles. Dozens, okay? So if somebody tries to tell you there isn't any law, they're lying to you. They're just straight up lying to you, and they're radically ignorant. Okay. The 5th and 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution protect due process. So the 5th restrains the federal government from infringing on due process rights, and the 14th restrains states from infringing on due process rights. So the 14th Amendment, ratified in 1868, declares, "Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law." So again, this limits the states, not the federal government, because the 5th Amendment takes care of that. Okay, so the 14th Amendment does that. Now, most states also have a clause, like in Washington State, it's in Article 1, that says something very similar, that no person can be deprived of their life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, liberty is, for example, the right to travel. Liberty is the right to go to work, have your business open. Okay. And property kind of plays in there too. All right. This is a very, very key principle to understand. Due process in America, and again, dozens of court cases on this, due process in America is violated when government actions are arbitrary or capricious. Okay? Now let me go further. When the government restricts a constitutionally protected right, there must be a compelling governmental interest to restrict those rights, and the restriction needs to be narrowly tailored to meet that interest. In other words, it cannot be broad sweeping. It has to be very narrowly tailored to achieve that compelling interest. Okay? Let's define arbitrary. Arbitrary means, and this is Black's Law Dictionary for those paying attention, not supported by fair, solid, and substantial cause and without reason given. Makes sense, okay? So there has to be a substantial cause, has to be fair, has to be solid, has to be reasonable. Capricious, given to sudden and unaccountable changes of mood or behavior. So I'm going to take this one first. So when the Michigan governor said, if there's more protests, we're just going to extend this, that is a very clearly capricious statement. She is acting in a capricious manner out of spite, sudden unaccountable change in her mood and behavior to punish citizens for exercising a constitutional protected right. So that her action there is capricious. So it's unconstitutional to even talk that or threaten it. Okay. All right. Attorney General Barr made a couple of statements recently. I want to go through those. First, he said that the reasonable restrictions of rights must meet the danger. Okay. So you can't have something unrelated to what the danger actually is. And we're going to get into this here in a second. The second thing is the government must always use the least burdensome measures to achieve the public safety, and only burdens on rights strictly necessary to deal with the problem. Again, this is A.G. Barr. Also, constitutionally protected rights are never suspended. They can never be suspended. They may be restricted, but they can never be suspended. Now, this specifically goes to that situation in Mississippi where this law enforcement officer said your rights are suspended. That does not happen. Okay, they can be restricted in either time or place. There's a couple others too, but just for the sake of what we're talking about right now, time or place. But they cannot be suspended, right? That's very important. So the constitutional question that we face in Washington is not whether a business is essential or non-essential. That is the wrong question, because that statement in and of itself is arbitrary and is unconstitutional. The question is whether the business can operate safely. That's the question. And so everybody that's talking about essential, non-essential, that right there, you just go to court and you've admitted it's arbitrary. And we'll give some examples here in a second. So let's talk about the facts on the ground right now. All right, the New American Magazine, I'm going to go for some primary sources very quickly. The New American Magazine, it's interesting. All of the massive attacks that they've received, even though they've never retracted an article in 35 years. That's how accurate they are. Arguably the most accurate publication in America right now. Okay. So, this is a Kentucky State University assistant professor, compared the lockdown states with those resisting such measures and relying solely on social distancing, the latter being Arkansas, Iowa, Nebraska, North Dakota, South Dakota, Utah, and Wyoming. Okay. The results. Given that those states are less populated and are more sparsely so than many lockdown states, it's not surprising they experienced substantially fewer cases and deaths in the lockdown states. Yet the free states, these are the ones that are not locked down, fared better even when they adjusted for population counts. Okay, so now we know that lockdowns arguably do not work, okay, according to what has been said. Number two, this is also on the New American, New York virus death data confirms that the overwhelming majority of folks that have died, died from comorbidities. In other words, they had another underlying sickness. Now, if people are immunocompromised, they're already going to be taking precautions and staying at home anyway. These are not healthy people to begin with, okay? It's so critical. And this state data showed 89.1%, almost 90%, had one or more comorbidities. Then you had another study that the New American talked about from the University of Southern California and the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health that showed that instead of the death rates being 2.0 to 4%, that the death rates were actually closer to 0.1%, or 10 in 10,000. Okay, so now we have facts, again, not disputed. We have facts out here to ask some questions. The overwhelming majority of these folks already have a sickness. The death rate in the overall population is 0.1%. Why are we destroying our economy over this? And oh, by the way, this proves that if the action is broad sweeping, that it therefore is arbitrary just based on those facts. Now, one other thing I want to throw out there. Foundation for Economic Education, or FEE, also had an article about individual responsibility policy. And this is a policy in Sweden. They didn't lock the country down, but they trusted individuals with their responsibility. And that has actually flattened the curve in Sweden. So you have a country that we would consider a Western country that has proven this out as well. All right. Now, the narrative in the mainstream media is fear the virus, fear the virus, fear the virus, and hate those opposing the governor because they obviously want to get everybody infected through irresponsibility, okay? Now, this hate that is being put out in the media led to the incident yesterday I want to talk about very briefly, where this California, so there's people protesting in downtown Spokane, and this person from California starts egging the cars that are driving by honking, and apparently was arrested. There's a couple of questions. Number one, was she left-handed? That came from Brian Breen, by the way. Number two, we're wondering if these were Wilcox eggs that were being thrown. And number three, why did she feel like she had to do that? And oh, by the way, on a Facebook post I saw, local socialists were actually advocating further violence like this against people. They actually were cheering her on. Unbelievable. All right, now, let's talk about this part of the narrative about fear and about the law. Now, we have some elected officials, unfortunately, that they fear Inslee more than they want to uphold their oath to the Constitution. Inslee is clearly operating in an arbitrary and capricious manner, which means he is acting unconstitutionally. So the sheriff in Franklin and Snohomish County say they won't enforce a stay-at-home. I understand the Kittitas County sheriff has come around to that way of thinking as well, and that just happened today. And that's because Article 5 of the Constitution of the United States says that every officer, including state-level officers, need to swear an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the state. So the governor, acting in an arbitrary and capricious manner, is violating the state constitution. Yes, you can stand up against them, Brad Peck, County Commissioner of Franklin County. Yes, you can stand up to that. And oh, by the way, AG Barr has already said that some of these restrictions on churches are clearly unconstitutional as well. Look, we all understand that this thing is real. We also understand that the best way to mitigate is hand washing and strong immune systems. We should be doing that anyway, because it always is the answer. But let me give you some examples of arbitrary, capricious situations right now. First of all, restaurants have a routine health inspection to ensure, and they also have a whole bunch of things put into place to ensure that there is no spread of any disease or any illness in a restaurant. And restaurant workers, you're listening to me, those who work in the service industry, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Some of it's draconian. So why could they not maybe wear masks and serve? Wash their hands more frequently. So to close restaurants when they could safely open is unconstitutional. Let's talk about construction workers. Now, interestingly, guys that are doing framing, they're inherently 6 feet apart because that's how long the boards are, right? So that doesn't make any sense in residential construction. Painters go to work. They're already wearing masks as well as drywallers. Plumbers are wearing gloves and usually working by themselves, especially in residential construction. And electricians, the same thing. So again, to ban that is arbitrary, doesn't make sense, doesn't meet the danger, and is therefore unconstitutional. Let's talk about fishing and hunting. They're inherently separate activities. When you're fishing, you don't want to get near anybody else's fishing pole. Hunting, particularly, you don't want to be near anybody else. I mean, I guess unless you're sitting in a tree stand, but most of the folks that I know, they hike a lot. And even if they were in a tree stand, usually you're wearing a bandana around your face and you're wearing gloves because it's cold outside. So to ban fishing and hunting at the same time that the governor is having press conferences and meetings where he is really saying that there is a danger there and it's clearly not there is unconstitutional because it's arbitrary as well. And I think in that case, it's probably capricious because he just doesn't like hunting. Churches and cars, well, they're totally insulated and they're trying to say that they're going to arrest people doing that. That is an arbitrary action, which is unconstitutional. And by the way, just as a history note, churches during the Great Plague, that's where the word hospital comes from the Hospitaliers. They actually went out and ministered to people during the plague because it's a Christian ministry to do so. So pastors, if you're listening to that, remember that history. Number six, hospitals are at a lower capacity now, and they're seeing a rise of severe situations and illnesses because people have been waiting to come to the hospital because the hospitals have only been partially opened. And oh, by the way, how many cases in the last 10 days? Everybody listening should find out of COVID-19. Number seven, there was a picture of the emergency management center here in Spokane, and the guys are sitting right next to each other. So none of us can be hunting or fishing, but you guys can sit right next to each other on the computers and be asinine and also unconstitutional because now you've just proven this is arbitrary and capricious, this social distancing thing. And then lastly, as an arbitrary example, abortion clinics and elective surgery, by their own admission, are essential, but gun stores are not, even though the crime rates, property crime rates, are starting to go up and people have the right of self-defense. Interesting there, too. So, arbitrary and capricious is unconstitutional. It's clear the governor is doing this. The Attorney General of the United States is looking into this stuff in different states around the country. And it's also clear something else. This underscores the need for the legislature to be in session. This is not a strategic issue. It's a duty issue. We should be giving oversight, especially since we've seen this now run rampant. And by the way, four leaders signing off for the entire state of Washington certainly don't represent the sentiments of a lot of folks here in Eastern Washington, particularly, that these things got continued. We need to reopen the economy and get out of the way of the American people. And there it is. And that is the briefing. And remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Go look up the primary source documents, too. And thank you to everybody that's been praying for us and going to Facebook/Patriot Radio US and liking the page and sharing it with your friends and family. And also, Patriot Radio is on iTunes and Podbean, just Matt Shade Podbean. And you can listen to this later and help get these arguments out there, because it's so crystal clear once you see it. And again, dozens of Supreme Court cases have backed up this principle that it cannot be an arbitrary, capricious action that has no grounding in reason. All right. With all of that, is my pleasure, because a lot of people have been asking about our food supply chain, particularly to have Bill Bullard. He's the CEO of RCAF USA. And I just wanted to just tell a little bit about RCAF, if I could here. It is the largest producer-only membership-based organization that exclusively represents U.S. cattle and sheep producers on domestic and international trade and marketing issues. Bill, thanks so much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Thank you. My pleasure.
Well, so I'm going to jump kind of right into this. How has this affected the cattle industry, this whole COVID-19, how are you guys faring, actually?
Well, U.S. cattle producers, and there's about 750,000 of them scattered all across the United States, they generate about $67 billion a year in annual cash receipts from the sale of their cattle and calves. That makes the U.S. cattle industry the single largest sector of American agriculture, and because we're in every state of the union, we're arguably the most important economic cornerstone to rural America. And our industry has been in a crisis for many years. Beginning in 2015, we saw cattle prices collapse further and faster than at any time in history. And while cattle prices were collapsing, the value of beef that consumers buy in the marketplace disconnected from the value of cattle, and so cattle prices began to fall precipitously while consumer beef prices continued to rise, hitting new record levels. So for the past 3 years, from 2017 to now, we've seen consumer beef prices steadily rising, and we've seen cattle prices paid to America's cattle farmers and ranchers steadily decreasing. And then the COVID virus hit, and most effectively, if you will, in March. And we saw a crisis upon a crisis, because suddenly consumers realized that our system was broken, because we were seeing reports of empty beef cases in grocery stores. So what's happened in our industry is cattle producers today are receiving well below the cost of production for their livestock. We're going to lose many of those 750,000 cattle farmers and ranchers if we don't reverse this process. So the marketplace is broken. Our cattle producers are suffering. And now with the COVID virus, we have many packing plants that are either slowing production or in some instances ceasing production. And as a result, because four packers control 85% of the fed cattle market in our industry, they are a tremendous bottleneck. And if a single plant closes, it starts to back up cattle throughout the entire system. So we have members who have cattle ready to market, and yet they have no market to market their cattle into, because the bottleneck at the meat packers is so severe that they cannot even access the market. So that's the situation we face now. Is we've reached the point where we knew we were going to be if we didn't change this broken market since 2015. And because we didn't, we're in dire straits now. And now consumers are suffering right along with the producers, because we're unable to process the animals that we have. And that's because we've allowed our industry to become highly centralized and highly concentrated. And that was the globalist effort by multinational meat packers to control the entire industry, the entire cattle industry, like they already control the poultry and hog industries. And so we're the last frontier for those meat packers, but they've been pressuring hard to capture control of the live cattle supply chain away from independent American cattle farmers and ranchers.
Well, let's talk about this right now, because this becomes a geostrategic issue if we don't have cattle in the United States of America, or if we're relying on another country to produce and provide us with cattle. Who? Well, first of all, let me start with this question. Who owns these packing folks, and who's behind this really, and who should the listeners really be looking at as putting us in this situation where we have a highly centralized industry now that is and could cripple America?
That's exactly right. We have four major meat packers in the United States that control 85% of the Fed market. They are Tyson, Cargill, JBS, and National Beef Packing Company. Now, of those big four meat packers that control our industry, two of them are Brazilian-owned. JBS is a Brazilian-owned company, and Marfrig from Brazil recently acquired controlling interest in National Beef Packing Company. So we have four multinational corporations who have no particular loyalty to the United States that have been working to vertically integrate our industry and control it. And so now our regulators have not enforced our U.S. antitrust laws, the Sherman Act, the Clayton Act, nor have they enforced our Packers and Stockyards Act that was intended to protect independent producers from both antitrust activities by the packers, but also anti-competitive practices, unfair and deceptive type practices. So the large multinational corporations were viewed as hands-off by the government for decades. And so now we have about 75% of all beef production and about 80% of all the feedlots that directly provide cattle to those packers are all located in the High Plains region of the United States, which are six states right down the middle of the country. You've got Texas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Kansas, eastern Colorado, and western Iowa. So that's where the entire or the majority of beef is produced. And if you have any kind of a crisis, whether it be the COVID-19 or if you had an animal disease crisis like foot and mouth disease that's endemic in Brazil and other countries that we're actually importing beef from, if a breakout of that disease were to occur that affects primarily animals, not humans, you could have the same type of a devastating impact that we see today, and that is an inability to bring the beef product to the consumer, even when America's cattle farmers and ranchers have the cattle available with which to feed the American consumer. So we're looking at a system that is broken, and it is broken because the government, the regulators, have not properly enforced our laws and, in fact, have facilitated the meat packers' efforts to continually consolidate and concentrate. They did it in the hog industry first, and we lost 75% of all of our hog farmers just since 1990. So we eliminated about 200,000 independent hog producers that were scattered all across the United States, brought them down to 68,000. That's an easier number for these multinational packers to manage. And now what we're seeing is we're actually seeing hog farmers in these vertically integrated systems are going to have to start euthanizing hogs because they can't bring them to market because of the COVID-19. Now, I said earlier, the cattle industry is the last frontier. We're not yet completely vertically integrated as the hog industry is. So we still have independent producers who can bring these cattle back and put them back on grass or feed them and kind of withstand this emergency situation, at least for a short period of time. But that's not true in the poultry and hog industries today. They're simply going to start killing animals.
Well, let's talk about this. We already have farmers that are plowing under onion and potato crops and other crops too, but mainly here in Washington, that's what we're looking at. They're plowing these crops under, and then the question becomes, especially in regards to animals, this isn't something that can just appear overnight. You have gestation cycles for these animals. What happens in 9 months if we start killing all these hogs and cattle, I mean, what is going to happen to our supply chain? And what are you predicting out there right now, or what are you concerned about?
Well, this is a real concern. We've never been in the situation we're in today. We should have avoided this situation by enforcing our antitrust laws, by not allowing these major meat packers to engage in what we call merger mania through the 1990s, because the system we have now is inherently incapable of maintaining our national food security interests. We're now seeing that firsthand today. We should have been supporting and promoting local, regional, smaller packers scattered all across the United States, and we once had that. Less than half a lifetime ago, for example, we had hundreds of thousands more cattle farmers and ranchers. We had tens of thousands of more feedlots scattered all across the United States. And we've had hundreds more meat packers, but we've allowed the industry to essentially regulate itself. We've left it alone, and now we are vulnerable as a nation to maintaining our food security interests. So if we go for 9 more months, as you say, and actually continue witnessing hog producers, these corporate hog producers and corporate poultry producers having to kill poultry and hogs, what you said is just right. You know, we've reduced the genetic diversity within those industries because now it's the multinational corporations dictating what genetics the farmers must use. And so the gestation period, particularly in cattle, though we're not killing cattle other than those that are actually going into the food system now, so we're not experiencing that particular challenge in our industry. But you're right. For a cow, it takes 3 years to begin rebuilding a liquidated herd, and that's because we had the longest biological cycle of any farmed animal. A calf that is born this spring, for example, won't be ready to harvest until it's 15 to 18 months of age. So this is a terrible situation for the United States to be in. We're in because it's our own fault. We didn't do what was necessary to ensure that we could maintain the food security needs of the American citizens.
So, you know, the question comes up, what is actually happening? You know, we have restaurants that are closed, so there's an entire restaurant market that went away, at least a portion of it that went away. But we still have people buying on the other end from, you know, Costco, you know, steaks and from Fred Meyer and all these other places. So you would think it would balance out, but it's not. What's actually going on? Can you tell us what's happening in the market?
Well, the entire food system, from the American farmer or rancher all the way to the consumer, has been highly concentrated above the farmer and rancher, and even the farmers and ranchers are being concentrated and consolidated because they are dwindling in number, so you have fewer of them. So the meat processors that are now dominant, if you close one plant, you begin to back up the system. And if you go further downstream, you have the distributors and the wholesalers and the transporters and the retailers. And all of those were geared and were skeletonized in order to meet the profit goals of the meat packers and their shareholders. They had little or no concern about national food security. So they skeletonized the whole system in order to maximize their profits. And now when the restaurants closed and consumer buying patterns shifted to grocery stores, the entire system was incapable of making that shift to begin distributing these products to the grocery stores. And then you had workers inside these plants begin to get sick. So you had the plant slowing down production or closing plants, and it just it's a complete roadblock in the entire system. The system's broken. We've got to fix the system. And the way you fix the system is we need many more meat packers. We need more distributors. We even need more retailers scattered around the United States. We've got to reverse this disastrous trend that we've been on for decades.
Well, and all the entrepreneurs listening, I hope your ears are perked up. We need more meat packers out there, particularly right now. And How do you think the Trump administration is going to handle this? Because there could be some incentivization of, you know, the meatpacking industry for this to decentralize, and also to help get the throughput going again where it needs to go. And how do you think the Trump administration is going to handle this? And is he listening to you guys?
Well, unfortunately, the answer to the last question, is he listening to us? The answer is no. From our perspective, he has continued to surround himself with the old guard that brought us to the position that we're at today, even though for the past 4 years we've been trying to crack through that circle or that impenetrable wall that he has built with this old guard. And so the solution has got to be, and we will continue to try to reach President Trump, the solution has to be that we have to create an economic environment that is conducive to entrepreneurs entering the industry and beginning to compete as meat packers and processors and distributors. And one of the problems that we've had is as we've allowed the meat packers to essentially self-govern their operations, they were also the ones that were creating and defining the legal and policy framework that defined our whole industry. So they've established a legal and policy framework that actually is a barrier to entry for new entrepreneurs. The regulatory requirements for a smaller packer are identical to the regulatory requirements of these huge packers, and they were successful in preventing state-inspected beef plants from selling beef across state lines. They limited the opportunity for these smaller plants to grow and to be competitive. We've got to reverse all of that. And what's really astonishing about that is at the same time, we allow imports from 20 different countries for beef. You know, we're importing beef from Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Honduras, Uruguay, Brazil, Argentina, New Zealand, Australia, Mexico, Canada, Ireland. There's a total of 20 countries that we're importing 3 billion pounds of beef from a year. And obviously, those countries do not have the same infrastructure and food production standards that the United States has. And nevertheless, once those products enter the United States border, they're allowed to traverse into every state of the union. But yet, a state-inspected beef plant is not allowed to ship beef across state lines. So we're working to correct that, to create a new environment that will allow the opportunity for entrepreneurs to be successful and not forced out just months after their startup occurs.
In the last 2 minutes that we have left, if you could tell the listeners a little bit about where they can go to find information about your organization or even join if they need to, and also what would be your one message to the cattle folks here in Washington State?
Well, we need their help. In fact, we need consumers' help. We need the consumers' help so that American farmers and ranchers can rebuild this broken system and continue providing them safe, wholesome, and affordable beef. And the way they can help is they can go to our website at www.demandusabeef.com. That's demandusabeef.com. And they can sign the petition that we're trying to get 100,000 signatures so we can bring it to President Trump. We just kicked this off this morning, and already there are over 7,000 petition signers on that. And what U.S. cattle producers need is the ability to distinguish their product from amongst all that product coming from 20 different countries. Right now, the meat packers can source cheaper, undifferentiated beef, sell it to unsuspecting consumers. All the beef has a USDA inspection sticker on it, leading consumers to believe it must be a domestic product. But that safety inspection sticker does not denote the origin of the product. And the meat packers are using that deception in order to fool American consumers. We want American consumers to be able to choose to buy the best beef in the world produced under the best of conditions. We can only do that if Congress will pass mandatory country of origin labeling for beef. So all beef sold in America will be labeled as to where it was born, raised, and slaughtered. So we urge everyone to go to www.demandusabeef.com and sign our petition.
Thank you very much. God bless you. And You know, if there's anything else that we can do to help get the word out, Bill, please let us know and keep up the fight and don't let down, okay?
Thank you very much.
All right. It was great having you on Patriot Radio. Bill Bullard, CEO of RCAF USA. And again, go sign the petition if you didn't hear about that. You know, I've offered a lot of prayers here recently. And a lot of those prayers have included healing. A lot of those prayers have included especially healing for, you know, not just physical healing, but for the businesses as well. And what I've seen is a lot of folks still believe the hype from the media, and they just shouldn't. You just shouldn't. The numbers are not there. Everybody keeps crying science. The numbers aren't there. They're just study after study. They're not there. But on top of that, constitutional rights, you're not breaking the law when you're exercising them. It's impossible for that to happen. Remember that when the governor is acting in an arbitrary and capricious manner, he is acting unconstitutionally, especially when it's so crystal clear. So take a look at and re-examine what your worldview is. Because if this continues, every single thing that's going to be a crisis is going to necessitate some other restriction of our constitutionally protected rights. And as I said before, not only does there need to be a compelling interest, but there also needs to be narrowly tailored. And we don't have that in Washington State today. So stand up for your rights. Keep fighting. May God bless all of you. And we are the greatest generation.